It's good to see all of you this morning. We'll be in Acts chapter 22 and 23 this morning. And so if you want to turn there, if you've got a Bible, that's where we'll land in a few minutes. If you don't have a Bible, there are Bibles in the pews in front of you or on the bottom of the chairs in front of you that you can use as well. In fact, Tracy used one this morning when he did his communion meditation. I saw him slipping it back on his way back this morning. So they do get used once in a while, so they are there. Now, there are several of you who enjoy baseball. I know that. I do. I know that. I've sat and I've listened to conversations about baseball. I remember being asked when I came to try out if I was a Cubs fan or a Cardinals fan. In baseball, there are a couple of things that make the game exciting. One of those is the fact that a pitcher doesn't get all of the batters out that they face. Very, very rarely does a pitcher end up getting all of the batters out in 9 innings of a game. And in fact, they never strike them all out. In fact, in the last number of years, since they've been keeping records, there have only been 4 9-inning games where the pitchers have thrown 20 strikeouts or more. And none of those were no-hitters. In fact, only one of them was a complete game shutout. The other thing that makes baseball interesting is the fact that even the best of batters, when they get up, they don't hit the ball every time. Ty Cobb, who has the highest career average, only got on base 2 out of 5 times he came up to bat. And the single season average was 4.4 out of 10 times that the batter came up to bat, and that was some guy from the Boston Bean Eaters in 1894. I don't know why they were the Bean Eaters, but I guess. All of that to say that even the most impressive people do not succeed every time they try. The same is true for us when we share the gospel with people. When we try to introduce people to Jesus Christ, when we try to explain the good news that He died on a cross and that He rose again, people don't accept that message every time that we share it. And in fact, if they immediately accepted the invitation into the kingdom, we wouldn't need to be here this morning because everybody would now be in the kingdom of God. But we know that isn't what happens. And so the question is what do we do? How do we handle those times when we don't think somebody is accepting the message that we have to share with them? And I phrase it that way because we don't know what God will do in somebody's life after the seed has been planted. We don't know where things may change, where things may crop up in their lives later, that the gospel will come to maturity. But what happens in those times when we share the gospel with somebody, when we tell them the good news of Jesus Christ, and they just don't accept it at that time? Believe it or not, the great apostle Paul didn't succeed every time he shared the gospel message. Just like a pitcher doesn't strike out every batter and no batter hits every ball that comes their way, the apostle Paul had those times when his sharing the gospel didn't change people's lives in that moment. His situation in Jerusalem, where we saw him last week, he was in the temple. He had been collected in the temple by the Roman authorities because they didn't want a full-scale riot taking place in the temple, and they wanted to know what was going on and why Paul had been why the Jews wanted to get rid of Paul. And so he was collected by the Jews, and we come to Revelation collected by the Romans, and we come to Revelation chapter 22, verse 30, and the Roman centurion who was in charge of Paul and trying to figure out why Paul was a problem person to the Jews, decides he's going to take them to the Jewish court, to the Sanhedrin of Jerusalem. And this is what we read, beginning with verse 30. It says, "The next day, since the commander wanted to find out exactly why Paul was being accused by the Jews, he released him and ordered the chief priests and all the Sanhedrin to assemble. Then he brought Paul and had him stand before them. Paul looked straight at the Sanhedrin and said, 'My brothers, I have fulfilled my duty to God in all good conscience to this day.' At this, the high priest Ananias ordered him to, or those standing near Paul, to strike him on the mouth. Then Paul said to him, 'God will strike you, you whitewashed wall. You sit there to judge me according to the law, yet you yourself violate the law by commanding that I be struck.' Those who were standing near Paul said, 'You dare insult God's high priest?' But Paul replied, 'Brothers, I did not realize that he was the high priest, for it is written, "Do not speak evil about the ruler of your people."' Then Paul, knowing that some were Sadducees and others were Pharisees, called out in the Sanhedrin, 'My brothers, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. I stand on trial because of my hope in the resurrection of the dead.' When he said this, a dispute broke out between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. The Sadducees say there is no resurrection, and that neither angel nor spirits, but the Pharisees acknowledge them all. There was a great uproar, and some of the teachers of the law who were Pharisees stood up and argued vigorously. 'We find nothing wrong with this man,' they said. 'What if a spirit or an angel has spoken to him?' The dispute became so violent that the commander was afraid that Paul would be torn to pieces by them. He ordered the troops to go down and take him away from them by force and bring him into the barracks." Paul is in a situation where he knows that no matter what he says, no matter how he tries to answer the charges, no matter how he tries to present the good news of Jesus Christ to those who are present in the Sanhedrin on this particular day, he knew no matter what he said, they were going to reject the message. And so as Paul comes into this situation, I believe that we see how we can handle similar situations in our life. The situations where we come up against somebody who doesn't accept the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, I would not recommend yelling at them. That's never a good idea. That's not what I think we need to emulate in Paul here. I think Paul's kind of yelling out was because of the specific situation, but there are some other things that we can do that we see in this passage. The first thing is that we need to understand our audience. That there are two things that Luke records about Paul in this case that helps us to understand and helps us to see that he understood his audience. First, it says that he looked intently. Now, this isn't the kind of things where you try to stare somebody down, but this is rather, Paul was looking intently and staring at the room and trying to understand and trying to see who was present so he could understand what it was that he needed to say. The other thing that Luke says is that farther down, Paul understood that there were some Sadducees and there were some Pharisees present. And Paul would have known this from the days when he was a zealous Jew persecuting Christians. Paul would have known this as growing up as a Pharisee. He would have understood the makeup of the Sanhedrin. And there is a good possibility that as Paul is standing here, he might have an idea who some of these men are from 20 years before, when he was a zealous persecutor. But Paul understood his audience. And I think it's important for us to understand our audience. When we start to share the gospel with people, we have to understand some things about them. One of the things that Paul understood about his crowd, understood about those there in the Sanhedrin, is he understood some of their personality. He understood their personality, and he understood that some of them, being Sadducees, didn't believe in the resurrection. Now, they may have accepted that at some point in the future there would be a resurrection, but they didn't believe that a resurrection could happen at any time. And they didn't believe that the spirits of people either became angels or became like angels, and people existed as spirits after their death. They didn't believe that, and Paul understood that about them, and so he understood some things about them. On the other side of things, he understood the Pharisees, that they did accept that a resurrection was coming. They may not have expected Jesus' resurrection, but they expected resurrection, and they believed that after we die, our spirits went on living. And in fact, that's why when Peter is arrested and is in jail and God miraculously releases him from jail, when he goes and knocks on the mother of John Mark's house door, the servant girl thought it was Peter's spirit or a ghost, Peter's ghost, is because they believed in those things. And Paul understood this. Paul also understood the rivalry that would take place between the Pharisees and the Sadducees. He understood their personality and the fact that the Pharisees wanted to stay true to the law and they wanted to live out the law of God as faithfully as possible. But on the other side of things, the Sadducees were willing to play to the Roman government because they liked the power that they had attained when the Romans took over, and they wanted to keep their wealth and their power. And so Paul understood these things. But we have to understand some things about the people that we share the gospel with. We have to understand some things about their personality. Are they an inquisitive person? Or are they inquisitive people? Or are they always looking for answers? Or maybe they're typically angry. You know, it's one thing if I share a message with somebody, if I share something with somebody and they're always an angry person and they get angry. Well, then you might say, well, that's just their personality. They need to learn not to be angry. But there's other people, you say, you know, they're normally a pretty quiet and pretty reserved person. And if they get angry, you say, whoa, I've gone too far. But you have to understand the personality of the people that you're sharing the gospel with. Because the personality of the person, the personalities of the people, will help you to understand what is going on with their response. When people reject the gospel, or when we think they are, sometimes their reactions aren't necessarily what they appear. The personality of the person will help us as we go on to the next step of the process, understanding that. But we also need to, knowing our audience, we also need to understand why they're resistant. Here's what I know, Tracy. Not everybody who is resistant is resistant for the same reason. There are different reasons that people will be hesitant to accept the good news of Jesus Christ. There are different reasons that people will be hesitant to accept you as the deliverer of that message. You know, some people, it's just a change in attitudes. Change is difficult. Except for changing our clothes, change is difficult. Whether it's changing your address, you know, have you ever moved? Change is difficult. Have you ever had to change jobs? You go from one position at the same employer to another, or you go from one employer to a different employer, and you have to change. And change is difficult because now you have to learn how to do a different job or to please a different employer. Change is difficult. How many of you know that change is difficult? You went from being single to being married, and you had to learn to be married. And it was easy, wasn't it? It happened. happened overnight. Yeah, the marriage happened overnight. You got married, but the change, the learning to live with one another and learning differences takes some time. It can be difficult sometimes. And I'm getting that stare from my wife that says, you're in trouble. Their change is difficult, and sometimes people's resistance is just the change is difficult, the change in attitudes. And some people just don't want to accept anything. It doesn't matter what you tell them. They just are the kind of person that isn't going to accept anything. You tell them that the sky is blue and they have to go look out the window. You tell them that it's hot outside and so they dress for snow. They just aren't going to accept anything. But you know, there are other people. There are other people who are dealing with things in their past. Somebody said something or somebody did something that was associated with the church and it hurt them, and they find it difficult to accept the message. And they may have held that grudge for years and years, but something happened and they won't let it go. And maybe they had the right. Maybe they have a good reason. Maybe it was something very difficult that happened to them or someone they knew. Some people just don't understand what God is doing and how God does things. And so somebody that they loved was sick and they prayed for them and the person ended up dying. Some people have just been badgered so much by others that they don't want to hear the message. But see, the thing is you have to come to an understanding of what the personality of the person is and why they're resistant. Because, well, Jesus said this in Matthew chapter 7, verse 6. He says, don't give what is holy to the dogs, or throw your pearls in front of pigs, lest they trample them with their feet and turn around and tear you to pieces. You see, there comes a point in time when we have to learn that it's okay to walk away, not necessarily from a relationship, but from the idea of sharing the gospel with someone all the time. To sharing the gospel. And that's where we find Paul. Paul is standing before the Sanhedrin, and Paul could have laid out for them his understanding of the resurrection of Jesus and the difference that it made and the fact that Jesus was the Messiah. But Paul knew that he could share that message all day and the people wouldn't accept it. Paul knew who he was standing before. He knew their personalities. He knew their qualms. He knew the things that... Well, he knew the real questions. You see, that's the next thing that we see in Paul, is Paul knew the real question. Paul knew that they had originally, that the Jews from Asia had originally thought that he brought in a Gentile into the temple. But Paul knew that wasn't the problem. Paul knew that wasn't the real issue. Because even if that had been the real issue, they would have calmed down and they would have after a little while, in Roman custody, they would have said, this guy isn't worth worrying about. But Paul knew that the real problem was the fact that he was preaching and that he had been talking about the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Paul knew that the problem was the Jews, the Jewish leaders, were not ready to accept that Jesus Christ was the Messiah and the resurrection was the proof of that God gave that He authenticated Jesus as His Son. And Paul knew that was the problem. And so rather than answering all the charges, rather than coming out and having a long conversation with them, Paul just said, you know what? I'm going to answer their question. He knows what the real question is. And for us, one of the things that we have to get to is we have to begin to ask the right kinds of questions so that we can understand what people's real resistance is. Why is it that they won't accept the message of Jesus Christ. Here's the problem. That takes some work. That takes some work because often people will put up a smoke screen. Often people will give you a pat answer that they've heard somewhere, but that isn't their real problem. They'll say, well, we know all the facts that people don't really raise from the dead. So you can't believe that Jesus rose from the dead. We know all of the facts about Christianity, and we can't buy that. We don't believe that. But if you really start to ask them some questions, you find out, well, there's really some personal hurt behind that. We need to be sensitive to their hurts and not just try to pound them with the facts. Or maybe they bring up the fact about an unloving God. Well, you know, if there was really a loving God, he wouldn't let people die from natural disasters. Or if God was really loving, he wouldn't have let that person die in a car accident. If God was really loving, what about all of the babies that are born to people that don't want them? If God is so loving, why do people get Alzheimer's and lose knowledge of everything? If God is loving, why? And you go behind the question, and it isn't about an unloving God, it's about past disappointments. It's about things that happened in their own life that they just didn't understand what God was doing. And we could look at others. There are so many things that people will use, that people will give you answers for. But what you have to come to do is understand what the real question is. What is it they really want to know? What is it that you could say? Not that would answer their question, but what is it that you could say that would leave them with a question? You see, often our problem is that we want to answer everybody's questions. We want to come up and face everybody's objection, and we want to overcome it. But often it isn't about overcoming the objections. Often it isn't about answering all of their questions, but you see what Paul does here? Paul leaves them with a question. Paul doesn't answer their question per se, but rather he makes them think about the resurrection. He looks at them and he says, I'm on trial here today for my belief in the resurrection. Now, specifically, Paul is pointing to one resurrection, and that is the resurrection of Jesus Christ. But he's also pointing to the fact that there is a resurrection to come. And he's pointing them to the fact that we all will be judged, and we will stand before the one who was resurrected first as our judge. And Paul was pointing them to the fact that the resurrection is real. And he left them with the question, what do we do with a resurrection? In fact, what do we do with a resurrection out of time? Because the Pharisees, while they believed in resurrection, were expecting in the last days, when God would come amongst His people, that there would be a resurrection of everyone. That's why when Lazarus dies, we have Martha saying, I know that he will rise in the resurrection of the last days. Because they believed in that. But what do we do with Jesus? Resurrected from the grave on the third day, what do we do with Jesus who hung on a cross but death couldn't hold him? And so Paul leaves them with that question. I think maybe he shouted it because there were already rumblings. They didn't want to listen to him in the Sanhedrin. They just wanted to get rid of him. And so Paul was forced to shout after he insulted the high priest. But I don't think we need to do that. Rather, we use our knowledge of the situation. We use our understanding of the person or people that we're sharing the gospel message with. We use their personalities and the things that we know about them. We begin to get deeper and we begin to understand the real question that they're facing and they're dealing with. And we use that knowledge of the situation to help us to prepare them. And we leave them with a question. We leave them with a question. We give them something. Something that will continue to work in their mind after we walk away. We leave them with something, a statement or a question, whichever the case may be, that they have to deal with. For Paul, it was the resurrection of Jesus Christ. For each person that we speak with, the question or the statement will be different. But whatever it is, it's not giving them the answers, but rather it's pointing them to an answer. It's pointing them to something that we want them to conclude without giving them the answer. You see, for Paul, it was talking about the resurrection of Jesus Christ, which pointed them to the fact that He was indeed the Messiah. That what God had promised He would do for the people of Israel, that He had done through Jesus Christ. Coming to free people from their sins and to bring life everlasting. But what is it we can do? What is the question? What is the statement? What is it that we can do to leave something in their mind that has to be fulfilled? An answer that has to be filled with a question that has to be filled with an answer. A void in knowledge that has to be filled with some information. A movement that has to be filled with an action. What is it that we can do? What is it that we can say that will force them to continue to think about what was going on? And then we leave them with a question. You see, just like in baseball, it would lose a lot of interest if every time a pitcher threw a pitch, the batter hit the ball out of the park. Well, what would be the fun if it was always the first inning with the visiting team batting? Where would be the excitement when a pitcher throws a no-hitter or a perfect game if they struck out every batter they faced every time they came out? Because there would be no throwouts at home, and there would be nobody caught trying to steal base, and there would be no excitement if it wasn't for the fact that the percentages say that a pitcher's only going to strike out a few batters every game, and only a few of the batters that come up to bat are going to get on base. And then the game gets interesting. Sometimes. Always, if you enjoy watching strategy, but sometimes they get really interesting. And you play every game because you never know what's going to happen. Well, when we share the gospel with people, not everybody's going to accept the message of Jesus Christ. Not everybody is going to say today is the day. Not every argument we bring up will answer the questions that somebody has. And in fact, some people will just reject the message. We have to remember, most often people aren't rejecting us, they're rejecting the message of Jesus Christ. If they're rejecting you, you probably aren't presenting it right. And that's another sermon in and of itself. But when people reject the gospel message, we have to understand that that's part of the process. And those things are going to happen. And when they do, and they will, we have to understand that it isn't always our job to be the one who brings in the harvest. Some days we get to be there for the harvest and we get to celebrate another soul coming into the kingdom. But often we just get to plant the seeds or water them along the way or try to remove some weed through cultivation to help them grow better. But when we do, when we find those people who reject the gospel of Jesus Christ, we look at the situation and understand who they are. We understand their real questions, and then we leave them with one of our own that points them to Jesus. Because we're called to take the gospel to all people. This morning, if you don't know Jesus as your Lord and Savior, we're gonna sing another song and we're going to offer you the invitation to begin that relationship with Him this morning, because there is no relationship that is of more value than the value with the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, Jesus Christ. If you need to begin that relationship this morning, I'd love to visit with you. You can come as we sing this last song. But this morning, an invitation is before all of us to invite the Holy Spirit into our lives and to work within us and to say to Him, I want to be a faithful servant. And so if you need to make another commitment, if you just need somebody to pray for you this morning, I'd love to do that. And in fact, this morning, elders will come, well, one of them will be out in the back. Tim will be available after we get done. And Tom will come up and stand over here on the side. And if you just want somebody to pray with you this morning, you can come and one of us will pray with you as well. Let's stand together as we sing this last song this morning. My Jesus, I love Thee.